Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope.
Welcome back to Anthologies of Hope and the second of two Conversations Cafe episodes that we recorded in the month of August. As always, I'm your host, Rick Osowski, and I'm not a mental health professional in any way, simply a mental health advocate with a passion for storytelling. Again, a little promotional work for the next few months before we jump into our live event recorded at Sip of Hope. Coming up this Saturday, September 7th, if you are in the greater Chicagoland area, you should definitely join us at Hope for the Day's inaugural Conversation Summit on the campus of University of Illinois, Chicago. The Conversation Summit will empower young voices through interactive sessions for learning, dialogue, and activism. Anthologies of Hope will be on site and recording all the main stage events for future releases. There are some amazing guests that you will not want to miss in person. And best of all, the event is free, but you do need to register ahead of time. So head on over to conversationsummit.com for more details and to get your tickets today. As I somehow forgot to mention on last week's introduction, you can join the Anthologies of Hope family in fundraising for To Write Love in Our Arms World Suicide Prevention Day campaign over at give.twloha.com/heartcamp18. We've been sharing some of the resources for this year's fundraising campaign on our social media accounts and building off the conversation starter of You Make Today Better. So think about that for a bit and head on over to our team donation page to make your voice heard and let us know why you make today better. Finally, we are already deep into planning and production for Season 3 of Anthologies of Hope and our next batch of lived experience interviews. We've already got close to half of our episodes recorded and just about the other half planned over the next few weeks. If the rest of the interviews are anything like the ones we've done so far, this upcoming season is one you're not going to want to miss. And now, on with the show. As always, Conversations Cafe is a monthly live podcast recording at Sip of Hope Coffee Bar featuring education and open forum dialogue on the intersections of mental health within our communities on a variety of rotating topics. This education programming is brought to you by Hope for the Day with support from their partners in prevention, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention of Illinois, ironically, and Banyan Treatment Center. This week's event is titled Out of the Darkness and just so happens to feature one of Hope for the Day's premier partners in prevention, the aforementioned American Foundation for Suicide Prevention of Illinois. In this episode, we cover some of the history of AFSP on a national level, the research, partnerships, and programming that AFSP Illinois does year-round, and cover their upcoming Out of the Darkness Walk on September 21st at Montrose Harbor in downtown Chicago. You can get more information at afsp.org/Chicago. Our guests this week include many of the AFSP Illinois family, and they discuss how mental health and suicide have impacted their lives, and as well as what brought them to their work with AFSP directly. Joining us this week are Courtney Collins, the Regional Director of AFSP Illinois and Missouri, Kara Levinson, Secretary for the Board of Directors and Co-Chair of the Education Outreach Committee, Mike Bushman, author and AFSP board member and volunteer, and Steve Moore, Co-Chair of the Board of Directors, Chair of the Advocacy and Policy Committee, and Captain of the RACE AFSP team. Every week, we'd like to remind you that if you are in a time of crisis, we'll be covering a range of potentially difficult topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and come back to listen once you are in a more positive season. If you are in need of help, an abundance of international resources can be found on the Find Help pages from To Write Love in Our Arms and Hope for the Day. Hope for the Day can be found at hftd.org/find-help. And To Write Love in Our Arms can be found at twloha.com/find-help. As always, you can find us at anthologiesofhope.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Anthologies of Hope, on Twitter as Anthologies Pod, or email us directly at anthologiesofhope, all one word, no punctuation, @gmail.com. Like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And if there's any other podcast platforms you'd like to find us on, let us know as well. So wrapping up our intro this week, if you're listening to this the day it comes out, check out the Hope for the Day Conversation Summit at conversationssummit.com. Help support the Anthologies of Hope family by donating to the To Write Love in Our Arms World Suicide Prevention Day campaign at give.twloha.com/heartcamp18. And finally, be prepared to give some past episodes a stroll down memory lane as we prepare for Season 3. But without further ado, this week's Conversation Cafe episode, in partnership with AFSP Illinois, Out of the Darkness.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of Conversations Cafe, hosted live at Sip of Hope Coffee Bar in Logan Square, neighborhood of Chicago, Illinois. Today we have a very special episode titled Out of the Darkness. And this episode is going to be focusing on a very special partnership Hope for the Day enjoys with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention Illinois chapter. That's AKA AFSP. One of the reasons that Sip of Hope exists is that it's supposed to be an anchor space in the community, a way to normalize the conversation on mental health. So the big focus being not just for people to come in and see the mental health information on the walls and in writing and in the art, but we want them to take the conversation with them when they walk out of these doors and bring it back into their community spaces. And to make a thing like Sip of Hope and really the Hope for the Day proactive prevention mission possible, it can't be done without building partnerships in the community. And one of the big things that Hope for the Day is proud of is a phrasing that we consider ourselves, we are in this together. So sometimes, as a point of reality, when we talk about the nonprofit world, sometimes people can feel like you're fishing for the same dollars or you're sort of in a neo-combative or competitive stance. And so that can create siloing. And we're very proud to be able to connect with other organizations that are doing the work of suicide prevention. And there's no fear to share resources, share information. And one of the most beautiful ways of demonstrating that is that for those of you listening, if you were to come to Sip of Hope right now, immediately when you walk into the front doors and you turn your head to the left, when we talk about making or raising the visibility of resources, we didn't just stick a sort of corkboard wall in the back and that's where you go and get stuff. We have a corkboard wall, but that's for events in the community. What we did is we created a very visible place where people can access resources right in front of them, not feel ashamed. It's not just about the presence of the resources, but it's also the visual demonstration of where they are. And so if you were to walk into Sip of Hope right now, you will see a beautifully created dedication for our resource board in honor of American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's contributions to supporting Hope for the Day's proactive prevention work. So we have the honor of being joined by a number of members of the AFSP Illinois chapter. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, but one of the things I wanted to, and they'll get to talk about it too in a second, but I just wanted to sort of take a second to acknowledge the dedication that AFSP created with our resource wall. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, but just sort of acknowledge and thank them for that level of support. So before we go into a little more detail about that, let's introduce our guests tonight. We're going to go down the order, and we'll do, just for the record, give us full names, positions, and relationship to AFSP.
Hi, my name is Kara Levinson, and I am the secretary for the board of directors for the Illinois chapter, and I'm also co-chair of the Education Outreach Committee. And I know that we're going to talk about the programs that we put together a little later, right, Carl?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
And my name is Courtney Collins. I'm the regional director of Illinois and Missouri, but my role here is really overseeing the Illinois chapter from A to Z. So all of our efforts programmatically, fundraising, board-related, and a variety of other avenues that I oversee. So happy to be here.
Hi, and I'm Mike Bushman. I'm a board member and volunteer with AFSP and involved in a number of areas, but our Project 2025 to reduce suicide levels by 20% by 2025, as well as our lived experience group.
Fantastic. So Kara, Courtney, Mike, thank you for joining us today. So right off the bat, we've got a good series of questions to talk about, but I just wanted to return back to the dedication of the resource wall and just, if anyone wanted to sort of jump in with a few added comments, maybe something I haven't covered in there. Anyone, maybe Courtney, you're getting pointed at.
Oh, so. About the resource ball, is that what you're, okay.
Yeah, just if you had some, your thoughts from AFSP's.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we've continued this partnership with you guys, and it's been a few years now, we were looking at different ways to continue to make an impact. And one of the ways we felt was having our resources. We provide free materials throughout the state. And so what better than to have these materials in both English and Spanish available to take so that anyone that maybe is struggling or has lost someone has, you know, these materials right at their fingertips as they walk in and out of this great coffee shop. So the idea behind this was, let's make this an even bigger vision, a board that you can't miss. And I love it. I'm looking right at our name right now, and it's something that's really special to us. As you walk out of here, you see that we're connected with Hope for the Day. But really, again, it's a spot where you can pick up those resources and you can find out how to receive the help or support that you may need. So we're really proud to be part of that. And there's a variety of resources that are available back there. So when you come in, make sure to take a look and grab whatever you need. And we're hoping that we can help some other people out and help save lives.
And that's a good transition point, or really a good lead in to, again, I'll put this out to the floor if anyone wants to jump in. So sort of talking about from AFSP's perspective, the partnership with Hope for the Day and sort of what's that history been like? Courtney?
And I'm back. So, you know, I when I started with AFSP a few years ago, the relationship had already been started with you guys. But since my time here, I think we've really found ways, again, to creatively become even better partners, whether it's supporting your events that are happening and being more involved from that aspect, to getting a little bit more creative and having this resource wall, to also, you know, being able to share our programmatic, you know, pieces with you, such as Talk Saves Lives, which has really been the main program, which we can talk about more. But I feel like we've found different avenues that really make sense and found synergies of how we can partner together and continue to spread this message about mental health and suicide prevention. So it's kind of an ever-evolving relationship and figuring out new ways of how we can work together. But it's, I think, probably going on 4 or 5 years. I'm looking at Dave out in the crowd there, but I would say we're probably pushing that, if not a little bit longer.
And that's a really good example. Talk Saves Lives, for instance, is something I know I've had the honor of being able to facilitate, and that's a perfect example of being able to, it's maybe in an old-fashioned vision of how nonprofits work that would not be something you would see, where it's been entrusted to go out and work in your name with an excellent program that, just for the record, Talk Saves Lives is effectively fits inside of a one-hour presentation focused on signs and symptoms, creating awareness, and providing resources for how to engage and respond to someone who may experience mental health challenges. And it was just a beautiful, natural, organic thing. It fits within Hope for the Day's mission of going out and doing the work and having the support and the credibility of this vetted program is just a real natural way of showing a good, strong relationship that's not just compartmentalized. And before we go a little bit further than that, I think it would also be important to talk about, you know, who would like to talk a little bit about the history of AFSP as its own entity? You know, I know you all founded, I don't want to take too many key notes. I know you all founded in 1987, but sort of what is the overall scope, just for folks who may not be totally familiar?
Well, we were founded in 1987, really more as and I'm talking about AFSP National. And we were founded more as a research organization initially, but in time the mission began to change. And when I say a research organization, it was one of the very few organizations out there, private organizations, doing research, funding research on suicide prevention. It was funded at a very low level. We still are seeking funding. We certainly have a lot more funding than we used to, but let's not kid ourselves. The real source of funding that this issue, mental health and suicide prevention, the real source needs to come from federal dollars. And we're doing better, but we certainly don't get, we meaning those of us involved in the suicide prevention world, in that work, and in the research, don't get the funds still that it will take to conquer these issues. My younger daughter, Ilana, took her life when she was 18, and that was in 2007. The walk that we're going to be having September 21st, and we'll talk more about that later, it happens to be that's her birthday, and she would be 31 years old. So, and what better place for me to be on that day than walking to help prevent suicide? So I really became involved with AFSP in 2009. And at that point, AFSP had just merged with a group called SPAN. And SPAN was an advocacy group based in D.C. And they put their resources together and began to create a much more vibrant, a much broader framework for the work that AFSP was doing. And every year, this has been, thankfully, a snowballing kind of organization. And at this point, we have four main areas that we concentrate on. We still are the largest private funder of research for mental illness and specifically for suicide prevention. We have great advocacy work, and Mike can talk about that in a few minutes. We also do outreach, which is something that I'm involved in, education outreach, and we will talk a little bit about the numerous programs we have. And then support for survivors of suicide loss. And that program is, I think, becoming more and more vital part of the organization. So that's where we are. Today is 2019. We've come a long way. The budget for AFSP has multiplied many, many times. And by the way, we are, you know, recognized as being one of, you know, five-star charity by Charity Navigator. We spend something slightly more than 83% of every, so 83 cents on every dollar that we take in goes directly to programming. We pay our people peanuts. But of course, Courtney could speak to that. No.
Thank you for that. And we touched on a few things that we're going to circle back to there. Before I jumped away from that, though, was there any sort of line items in research that sort of come to mind? Or would you say it's, or when we, at least just a quick note on when people talk about research, what does that look like? Is that university studies? Is that independent, you know, case studies? What would that be?
So that's evolved over time. Typically, what happens is somebody applies for a grant with AFSP, and typically the amount of the grant is what we would consider to be seed money. So it might be $50,000, might be $100,000. This is not humongous bucks, but many, many of the people, far more than just a majority of researchers who get funding from AFSP are able to turn that grant into grants with larger institutions such as universities or such as National Institute of Mental Health. I can. This is one of my favorite stories. There's a researcher, her name is Jonah Sarnow, PhD in psychology. She received at one point, I think it was $100,000 grant from AFSP to do research. based on the research that she did, she was able then to get a $3 million grant from NIMH, a $3 million grant from SAMHSA, and a $300,000 grant from another organization. So $100,000 ended up generating $6.3 million worth of research dollars. And that's not an unusual story at all for AFSP. And it's part of what makes me really proud. You can go on our website, AFSP.org website, and there are 67 videos about 3 to 4 minutes in length where you can hear about from the researchers themselves in lay language what each one of them is working on in terms of current research into suicide prevention. And it's fascinating, and I can understand it. So if I can understand it, it's pretty accessible to everybody. There are other kinds of grants. For the first time, AFSP is now reaching out and asking people to research specific topics that AFSP is interested in. So there's another kind of grant. There are young researchers grants for those who are, you know, kind of reward people and get them interested in the field of suicide prevention. And then there are grants for people who are established researchers. And I think last year our total research budget was more than $5
million. Just over five, with yeah. 26 studies going on.
Right. So it's wonderful. It's wonderful to know that this work matters to the research community. This is where I find them a lot of hope, is because I know that where we were in terms of understanding about mental illness, understanding about what's the difference between, you know, someone who gets to that point but does not attempt, you know, there is a line that's drawn. What we're learning about that, and we're just so much farther along than we were when my daughter died. It's very exciting. You know, one of the ways I am able to cope with Ilana's death is that by temperament as well as by my background, I'm a history buff. And I just look at all of this in a historical sense. And before, you know, we got rid of smallpox as a scourge for all the nations of the earth, millions of people died. And then, unfortunately, so there were people who later might have been able to get a vaccine, but they were born too soon. And that's how I kind of explain to myself that she's part of the human story. And unfortunately, she didn't make it long enough to be saved. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I want to thank you for sharing a little bit of that, Kara. And also to that point, when we talk just sort of a little button on the research end of this discussion, is the very real fact that we're kind of in a Star Trek moment for mental health and suicide prevention, and that, you know, it wasn't until the early 20th century that people understood that mental health was more than just a matter of willpower and matters of the heart, that there were biological and genetic factors at play, and this required a medical approach and not just a tough it out approach. But that didn't turn the tide, because when we talk about suicide, there was still an attitude that was either, at best case scenario, it was still a willpower thing, even if you're plugging in clinicians, and worst case scenario, that it was inevitable and unpreventable for someone who was fixated on harming themselves or taking their own lives. And we've obviously come to a place where the research has led us to understand that, unfortunately, suicide is not coming out of the blue. It's not an aberration of our imaginations. There's untreated and underaddressed mental health challenges that are compelling people to feel a sense of conviction that it's never going to get better and things like that. And research is also showing that there's a way to communicate and connect with individuals beyond just saying, well, make sure they don't have firearms or poisons or pills or something around them. There's more we can be doing. There's conversations we can be having to disrupt escalation and things like that. So that's the research part, is opening that door. And talking about research, we're going to talk about some of the programming and things like that. But I think this is also a good place to talk about, if you've got research, you got funding, you got these kind of things, we know that because suicide impacts the whole community, well, we're going to talk about how we communicate with individuals who are in pain. Well, we talk about individuals who support the community or be supportive to those who are struggling. We also need to talk about institutionally and civically what we can do. And I'd like to sort of, you brought it up a little bit talking about Mike, and I'd like to talk about the advocacy side, the and policy side here of mental health. And so we're going to do a little musical chairs here. Just joining us is Steve Moore.
That's right.
What's up, Steve? So I'm going to just automatically defer over to Steve to talk about at this scope, the legislative side and the policy side of mental health and suicide prevention and AFSP's sort of impact on there.
Yeah, the reason I'm late actually is I was so wrapped up in doing some research on something, on advocacy. I'll tell you, we passed a really nice bill this spring with a lot of help from our advocates that required the Department of Public Health for the first time to get involved in suicide prevention, to create someone who would actually be looking at coordinating activities, not only of every state agency, because a lot of the education department deals with it in some way, Veterans Department deals with it, the state police deal with it. So there's a lot of state agencies, but no one has any coordination of all that to see what they're doing. Plus, there's counties doing things, local groups like you that are doing suicide prevention. So we're trying to get someone that would actually, be a resource, not necessarily directing it, but just being a resource and saying, hey, yeah, there's someone down in Carbondale doing something like that. Let me get you guys in touch with them. So someone that just kind of can coordinate it all. So we got this bill passed. Unfortunately, during the whole negotiation, the department insisted on saying subject to appropriation. And so that was in the bill. Bill passed this spring, and we had a board meeting of the alliance of all these agencies on Monday. And the department came in and announced, "Yeah, well, when you set a subject to appropriation, we're taking that really seriously. We're not going to do anything unless we get one." And the way Illinois works, that means probably not till next July 1st. That's when the next fiscal year is. There's a veto session in November during which the legislature gets to override governor's vetoes. But this is Illinois. If something's agreed to, they just vote on it. There's been really serious legislation that came out in November that had nothing to do with the veto, but just everybody said, yeah, let's do it. So I am now trying to figure out, let's see if we can get the Department of Public Health, the governor's office, to create a budget that puts that into their agency and the legislature to approve it. So, today I was actually looking around, got wrapped up in it, around the country to see what agencies around the country are getting appropriations and how much. So I can go to the governor's office and say, well, Massachusetts has $1 million budget. You should at least be doing something like that. We're a lot bigger. So that's the kind of thing that is very current and very active, and we will be spending the next month and a half trying to convince the Department of Public Health, the Governor's Office, and the General Assembly to give some money to actually do something instead of just sitting and waiting until next July. There's a couple other things that were really nice that got passed this year, a bill that for college students that requires state universities and colleges plus community colleges to get really serious about mental health. They have, there's actually a, I think it's a one professional per 1,250 students, either in-house or with a contract with some mental health agency in that particular area. There's requirements for initial student orientation, requirements for RAs, you know, resident assistants have to get mental health first aid training. So there's a bunch of really good stuff in there. Again, no appropriation. So the that doesn't stop that one from going through. Now it's just more the colleges trying to figure out how we're going to fund this ourselves, or maybe try and squeeze the money out of the state. But that's going to get done. There's another one for there's actually two bills that were bills for first responders required again. It did have a figure, but it did require police departments, fire departments, sheriff's office, state police, all to have mental health officers in training. There's a training requirement now for sort of self-care for all officers. So there's some good stuff there that is happening in legislation. You know, and you know, I spoke this spring in before two committees on our bill, and boy, the response you get from legislators is just astonishing. You know, I literally, there was one of the legislators started crying as he talked about, he heard about a 10-year-old that died in his district that week. Another one, this grizzled old guy, says, I'm a farmer, and farmers have a high rate of suicide, and I want to see something done about that. So there's support out there, and we just got to get nice, solid proposals and get that to them, and I think we can get things done. Getting back to that bill I mentioned initially, the Department of Public Aid person on Monday told us, yeah, we did talk to the governor's office about this, and their first response was, I mean, you're not doing it already? So, you know, I think there is going to be some movement, but we just got to convince them that, yes, you can do it. There's going to be support everywhere, whether it's the governor's office, the legislature, the people out there, and there's a need for it. So, I mean, that's the kind of things that we're doing. Just procedurally, we have a thing called field advocates where people sign up, and actually what happens is it's just afsp.org/advocacy. You can sign up. You'll get emails from our national office that will tell you what's going on nationally, and they will help you very easily send letters to your state, to your U.S. senator and your House members about bills that they're interested in. And I've got the ability to get letters out to our Illinois advocates. We have about 1,000 people in Illinois that have signed up to do this. And so they then would send letters to their state reps and their state senators on the bills that we're pushing. So we have a nice mechanism to do this, and we're starting to get recognized. We're starting to get moving down in Springfield.
I want to make sure we mention, so one of the values that came out of that advocacy work at the federal level, really we've made some great progress in the last few days, was the 3-digit national hotline to replace the suicide prevention hotline. Now, we'd like to think everybody knows 800-273-8255, but when you're in crisis, you're not remembering that many digits. So hopefully, I don't know what the time frame is, and I don't know if you had an idea.
It'll probably be at least a year, more than that, but because there's a lot of technology that goes into just creating one of those things.
But obviously, that will make a difference. If people know, you know, the number and have it ready to call when they're in crisis, that makes a difference. Because very often, the people we lose to suicide, some of the research has shown that as little as a 5 to 10 minute window is all they spend thinking before taking their life about doing that. So if we can get them to, rather than going through with that action, to make a phone call, to know something to do to help themselves, that can make an enormous difference.
Yeah, and the other thing that particular bill is, what happened was Congress passed a bill last year, told the FCC to investigate this, but it also wanted an investigation into what are the funding needs out there. Illinois is one of the worst states in the country for its hotline response, and it's kind of an odd system. It's all really volunteer organizations, and maybe some hospitals do it, but in Illinois it's a couple organizations, but not enough. And so that when you make a phone call in Illinois, about 30% of the calls get answered by one of the Illinois groups, and the others get kicked off into sort of an overflow, which could be other state people, or it could be a national program that answers it. And they don't have, first of all, it takes longer to get answered. Could very well be a couple of minutes before it actually someone picks up the phone. You know, we saw in summer in Washington, the VA was giving a presentation, and their response time is 6 seconds. You know, they'll answer the phone within 6 seconds, whereas in Illinois, it could be minutes before it gets picked up because we just don't have the resources. Again, no state funding, and, you know, so Washington is looking into maybe filling in some of the state funding and getting, you know, some funding out there to make sure that states have better response times, more people actually doing that work and answering those phone calls, you know, with expertise. These are people who get training and they know how to handle an emergency. But Illinois right now is not doing well at that one either.
So I do want to make sure that we talk about your work, Steve, with our new red flag law. So some of you may or may be familiar with that term. It's coming on the heels of some of our most horrific mass murders that we've had in the United States over the past several decades. And one of the things that it's important to know is that not just in terms of homicides, but in terms of suicide, more than half of all suicides are done using a firearm. So the firearm owning and using community, when we talk about safe storage of firearms, we're really talking about saving lives for people who own firearms. In addition to that, we think of Chicago as being one of the most, one of the capitals of homicide in the United States. That's not a good thing. But there are actually far more suicides in Illinois than there are homicides. We just don't talk about them. The red flag laws, which Steve was really instrumental in introducing in Illinois, seek to make sure that people who are firearm owners or who have access to firearms, if they seem to be at risk of using that firearm on themselves or on others, that we have an opportunity to remove that from them, at least temporarily, until they overcome the crisis.
You're giving me way too much credit. There were a lot of other groups that actually proposed those, the red flag, and pushed it, but we were one of the, we supported it. But yeah, it's in fact, you've probably seen in the news, that's one of the things that, you know, some of people in national level are saying is an answer to the, you know, some of the gun violence you've seen. I mean, it's one piece of the answer, frankly, but it's a good one. I mean, it's only one that families, you know, can use if they see a member that's just, you know, a danger to themselves. They can make it in the, they refuse to give up their gun. They can go to get a court order and have their gun taken away from them. So it's one tool in, you know, in our tool chest for suicide prevention. You know, it's certainly not an ultimate answer, but it's one that's very valuable. And boy, if you can save some lives with that, you know, and this is, you know, really this gives families or friends that are worried about someone, you know, the opportunity to actually do something about it. Because if you can take away that weapon, there's a pretty good chance that, you know, that person, you know, can get through whatever crisis they're having at that moment.
And that's an excellent point. And before I go any further, we said, here's Steve Moore. But I think just again, for the record, who is Steve Moore?
I am one of the board members. And I'll give my story. I lost my son, Paul, to suicide back in 2006. He was a sophomore in college in Grinnell, Iowa. And I became active with AFSP within, you know, the next year. I think I took some training for one of our outreach programs. And I joined the board in 2009. And a couple years later, became the co-chair of the board. I run the advocacy program for Illinois. I also am on the National Public Policy Council for Illinois, so that, or for the country. So with AFSP, we have a group of people that pretty much set the agenda for AFSP, both on its federal advocacy and its state advocacy. I also run our marathon team. Literally, I run it. And this one's a cool thing. We started this one back in 2010. I think we had 9 runners first year, raised about $5,000.
For the Chicago
Marathon. And this year we have 135 runners, and I would bet we'll raise around $250,000. There's a chance of getting up to $300,000. It's just been astonishing. Those people just do an incredible job. I mean, they're raising on average about $2,000, $2,500 each for the privilege of running in Chicago Marathon. So it's been a great fundraiser. And it's humbling to see this, because these people, more than often not, most of them, actually, it's their first marathon. They're doing it in honor of someone that they lost to suicide. We've made a really big effort to get them custom jerseys, which is really important. They can put a photograph on the back, in memory of my brother, whatever they want to say on that thing. And they're running past, 1.6 million people are on that course, and they're running with their brother, their mother on their back. And I've heard from people, a week after the race, it was just the greatest experience in their life, being able to, go out there and do that fundraising, spend that summer knowing that they were running for their relative, and then actually in that race itself. And I've done it and had people, my son is on my back, and I've had people run up to me and say, I'm with you, or, just some comment about before they pass me and keep running. It's more than you would think. It's been a really emotional experience and gratifying doing that particular thing for AFSP. And it's been raising a ton of money. People nationally are just like, can't believe we're doing it.
No, that's a beautiful story. Because overall in the structure, AFSP is represented in all 50 states. And it's important for people to understand that there's a national focus, and then there's also this, every single state has an arm doing things. And it's great to know Illinois has such a robust initiative and team out there. And as Stephen mentioned, at afsp.org/advocacy, wherever you're listening to this, you can get involved at that legislative level, and there's even things like, go to your state capitol days, things like that. But it's more than just a showpiece. There is toothy legislation and legitimate policy initiatives that you can get behind to support this cause. And before we walk off of this into some of the more local programming, I wanted to ask, because Mike, you touched on it just a little bit, and I think it fits here, talking about 2025. And what is, you touched on a little bit, but what is the 2025 initiative?
Yeah, Project 2025 is really areas of focus within suicide prevention. We know that there are certain touch points where we can make a difference. For example, some of the research that we've done and that has been done in Australia and some other places has found out that most people, something like 40% of people who die by suicide were in an emergency department within, I think it was a month of the visit. What the research has shown is that when people go in, just having a simple phone call a couple of weeks later, or a postcard, as they found in Australia, can make a difference in terms of people's likelihood to attempt at some later point. Just having that contact point makes a big difference. So we're focused on healthcare systems, training emergency room physicians, programs in the corrections area. We lose a lot of people in the correction system to suicide, and there's a training programs around that. And I know I'm missing one. Oh, and the firearm safety along the red flag law. So those are just several touch points where we know through partnerships with like the American College of Emergency Physicians, training those emergency room physicians on how to handle somebody who's coming in with a mental health crisis can make an enormous difference. Most physicians in medical school don't get a lot of training in mental health. So you would think that there might be more expertise there than there is. There's really not a lot. So we're working on filling those gaps and providing the information resources that will allow them to have more successful interventions. And, you know, and one of the projects I had the chance to work on for AFSP is safety planning interventions for somebody who's in crisis have been proven to make a difference. So the National Healthcare Council boards through are now doing training for all of the behavioral health facilities and medical facilities that they certify on how to do safety planning interventions, how to get somebody to identify what are distractions that might help them in a crisis point, who are people that they might be able to be distracted by, who are people who might be able to help them. And just having that information thought through in advance makes an enormous difference. So Project 2025 is really just a supplement to what AFSP's already been doing, but again, focused on healthcare systems, primary care physicians, having them help to provide the, you know, ask the right kinds of questions and engage the right way, the emergency rooms, jails, and then the firearm side.
So I was thinking maybe, Mike, you could touch on some of the partnerships, because this Project 2025 is not an AFSP initiative by itself. Who are some of the other partners that we're working with?
Yeah, so on the firearm side, we work with the National Sports Shooting Foundation. Gun safety is something that gun owners should want to care about, and most do care about. So working with the National Sports Shooting Foundation, we came up with guidelines on what are the appropriate steps to take. And some of the research has shown that just keeping the ammunition separate from the gun and having the time to have to actually open a gun safe is enough time for somebody who's in crisis to rethink what they might be able to do. Sometimes you're just trying to buy minutes.
So for those of you who are not familiar with that organization, that is not the National Rifle Association, which the NRA represents individual firearm owners. The NSF...
National Shooting Sports Foundation.
Thank you. The NSSF represents mostly dealers and people who are own the ranges that people can practice at. So the hope is that they will post things about firearms, safe firearm storage, and also provide training and information to their constituents.
I'll even add, like, for example, in the National College of Emergency Physicians, so they put together with AFSP a very detailed list of things that can be done, you know, starting off with just screening people, then once it's screened that they may be at risk, have a much a better professional actually do a really evaluation of are they really at risk, doing the interventions that Mike just mentioned. You know, in an emergency room, physicians don't get trained on interventions like that, a safety plan or any kind of intervention. But the College of Emergency Physicians put that together with AFSP and is distributing it to emergency physicians, you know, to the state colleges, and the state colleges are supposed to be working with us around the country to get that into the hands of physicians. In fact, just a couple weeks ago, I sent all those materials out to the lobbyist for the Illinois Health Association, and she has a monthly, she actually does her mental health activity, and so she sent her monthly newsletter to every single hospital administrator in the state, of these emergency procedures that we've worked out with the College of Emergency Physicians. So that's one of the kind of things that we've done. We've also worked with the, there's an organization, it's actually centered in Chicago, that does the healthcare for certification for prisons. And they put together some materials with AFSP for what should a prison be doing to prevent suicide. I don't know if you noticed this one, when Jeffrey Epstein died by suicide, there were a couple of people, you know, there were some news items that mentioned the fact suicide is the highest cause of death in prison. in local prisons. Now in state, I'm sorry, in jails, local jails, so county, municipal jails, it's the highest cause of death. In state prisons, it's a little less because they just get better care and better observation in state prisons. But in those local jails, like where Epstein was, that's the highest cause of death. So we've worked with the this association that accredits them for their healthcare to actually put in suicide prevention as one of the things that they now have to have for accreditation. And we've even worked with the there's an accrediting agency out in the out in the suburbs that accredits all hospitals. And the same thing, our people have worked with them on some things that they can do for suicide prevention for hospitals. And so now suicide prevention is part of the protocol that is necessary for a hospital to get accredited from the Joint Commission. So those are the kind of things that we're trying to do, sort of give the people that are on the ground information that they never had before, and then to get those national organizations to get that back down to the street level to the people that are actually using it. But it's really with our input and using some of the expertise of AFSP's professionals.
Thank you. And I want to sort of just put a button on that point, too, is that especially with suicide prevention and mental health education and work and outreach out there, some people can, you know, if you're not careful, you could find yourself reduced to fluffy affirmative statements on social media and say, all right, do better and feel good about yourself and go on from there. But the fact is that it's something, it's a rallying call here over the day that you got to meet people where they are. And sometimes it means you're going to go into places that are unbelievably controversial or difficult in how you're going to approach them. The fact of the matter is with a thing like gun control, there's perfectly valid reasons to be advocating for, you know, active gun control, but working with an association that says, okay, you're going to be a gun owner is a way that it's an imperfect way of going in and meeting people where they are, that you have to have this policy. Same thing when we're talking about things like corrections. People are going to have whatever moral or whatever political attitudes they want about people who are locked up, whether it's talking about social justice reform or not, but the fact is that we know mental health and the correlation with substance abuse, high-risk behaviors, criminality is a big deal. So let's not just say, well, they're criminals and who cares what happens to them. And this is important, hypercritical to confront that and be honest about it and not be afraid. And I think it's important to, you know, commend AFSP for being bold enough to want to not just skirt around or avoid whatever questions might come up, but just let's find solutions. And so here's this excellent broad programming around legislative and policies. But AFSP has also created a diverse and robust series of programming tools directly in the community too. And I wanted to make sure, you know, before we run out of time, to talk about some of those things. So I've got a few different things. We touched on Talk Saves Lives a little bit, and I don't know if we're having Courtney jump back in here or not, but let's talk about some of the local, you know, community-based programs that AFSP has out there.
Okay. So Talk Saves Lives is probably the single most used program that we have at this point. It is for adults. The program can be shown with certain caveats to the right group of high schoolers. It could also be shown and demonstrated at for colleges and universities, but it really is for adults. And as Carl mentioned, it takes about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour to do justice to this program. It's low tech. The trainer who's facilitating the program is basically going through a PowerPoint presentation with a lot of the statistics about suicide and a lot of information about where, you know, communities that are at risk, and also we are here in a coffee shop, so and then, you know, what to look for and ways that we can enhance people's ability to withstand stresses. It's a very, very good program. It's one that gets updated regularly with new information. We have a general version. We also have a version for the LGBTQ community. We have one for seniors. We have one Spanish language version, and we have one for the gun owning community. And we're hoping to get one soon for first responders. Okay. We also have programs for kids in high school, their parents, and the teacher administrators. So there are three linked programs called More Than Sad. We also have a program that started several years ago in connection with the Jed Foundation. We put together, and of course the Ad Council, we help fund a series of actually amusing but very effective PSAs about reaching out to peers when you see that they're in trouble. And the program is called Seize the Awkward. And we've started to incorporate some of the Seize the Awkward videos, which are very, very good, into our programs for youth. One final program that we have that I think is just fabulous is called It's Real. It's a 17-minute video that is intended for people who are transitioning from high school into college, or could be used very well with people transitioning from one school to another, transfer students. And it really talks through the eyes and the stories and the speech of six real-life college students who have been bold enough and brave enough to come forward with their stories of mental health struggle and how going to college impacted them and how they sought help and how they are doing now, having addressed the issue of their mental health and what they do to keep, you know, assured that they will keep going, that they will be able to address whatever struggles they may have in the future. It's a very moving film, and it should be able to, at 17 minutes long, it should be able to be incorporated into any school's student orientation. And then there's a five-minute sequence afterwards for college counselors to let them know, and teachers, you're a touch point for college students. And when you see someone struggling, it behooves you to reach out and suggest that they come and see someone at the college counseling office.
That's perfect. And just as a little side note plug there, you can get a little taste of Seize the Awkward and AFSP programming at on September 7th at the USC Forum for Hope of the Day's Conversation Summit, which is a mental health convention, essentially, built on a platform of a whole group of stakeholders coming together to share their information and work on suicide prevention and, more importantly, mental health in as many intersections with youth. Mike is actually going to be facilitating the presentation at that on September 7th, so it's a little side note there. And before we sort of wind down, there's two things I wanted to touch on really quickly. One, we talked about Conversation Summit, and we talked about the Chicago Marathon, which is a fun little run. But I do believe there's a little bit of a physical activity going on that you all are producing yourselves coming up this month that we should probably talk about. Courtney Collins is being waved back in. Jump on in. Thank you, Steve. Everyone say thank you, Steve.
Steve and I are playing musical chairs here. It's a little dance of sorts.
So let's talk about it, because the fact is, to be perfectly frank, mental health, suicide prevention, it can seem a lot of things, but one of the most powerful national unifying messages, whether people realize it or not, they may not be able to know who NIMHA is, or National Institute of Mental Health. You may not know who SAMHSA is, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Association. But chances are, if you talked about large-scale and impactful initiatives on suicide prevention, you might be able to get somebody to recognize Out of Darkness and things like that, if nothing else. And that's very important because the name of the game is breaking silence. It's starting conversations. And so let's talk about Out of Darkness a little bit.
Great. Well, of course, we're excited to talk about this, and it's only a few weeks away. So the Out of the Darkness Chicagoland Walk is actually one of probably over 350 walks taking place around the country, which is incredible when you think about that. Most of them taking place in September and October. But the one here in Chicago is on September 21st. It's happening at Montrose Harbor. We will open the site at 9 a.m. There's a lot of activities that go on, from remembering loved ones with our memorial wall to sharing your reason of why you walk, whether it's for yourself or someone else. You can write messages on the Why I Walk wall. When you see these images, which you maybe if you follow us on Facebook, you have, they're incredibly impactful. You see how suicide has touched so many lives. And the walk is about that. It's about bringing people together to connect, to build community, to inspire, to build hope. And all of those words, like, they give me chills when I start saying them. But that's what the walk is about. It's to come together and bring this issue out of the darkness and into the light, hence the name. So, you know, last year we had over 7,000 participants. We were actually the first walk to raise over $1 million, which is incredible. It's a big milestone, but it's also showing that there's people care. And, you know, to be honest, majority of that money is peer-to-peer fundraising. So the great thing about that is that translates to conversations, that translates to reaching other people, your donors. And I think we had over 16,000 donations or something. I'm not saying they're all unique, but that's a lot of people that our walkers are touching. So it's a really, really a special day, and we always hope for great weather. This year we're hoping, you know, to get a few more hundred people there. We're tracking that way and to break that $1 million mark again. But the great thing is that money that we're raising allows us to do the programming and the advocacy work and Project 2025 work and to help support the research that's being funded from our national team. So it's a really, really important event, but more importantly, it's a really special and moving event. And there's a lot of great things that are going on. The walk starts at 11 a.m. I don't think I mentioned that, but September 21st, Montrose Harbor, and we'll be there and ready. And there's comfort dogs, we have face painters, food trucks. So it kind of runs the gamut, but it's a really, really nice day.
I think one of the things that gets missed in the walk is just how important those conversations are that you have with other people while you're there. I mean, just, I don't know what the walk is, 3.5, 4 miles. But by the time I've done that, I've usually had several conversations with people that just, they're really uplifting. They really help you understand, you connect, you really feel like the whole community cares, and it's just an uplifting day. And
yeah. At the walk, everyone puts on colored beads, and the color signifies a person that you've either lost, or if you're a person who is struggling, or if you are simply an ally in the fight against suicide and for mental wellness. And you see somebody, you know, across the way who has the same color beads you have on, and there's a connection. I went, my remaining daughter, who lives in Hoboken, New Jersey, I actually ended up going to the Out of the Darkness walk there as well as Chicago. It's much smaller. But I wear white because that's for loss of a child. And I saw a woman across the way. She didn't look anything like me, but we were connected. And once the walk ended, she found me again. I had sort of mouthed "Hi, Mom" to her. And she found me, and wordlessly, we just stood there and gave each other the deepest hug. So it's a very important day for those of us who struggle with mental illness, with mental wellness, and for those of us who have lost someone to suicide.
Thank you for sharing that once again, Carrie. Keep going.
Sorry, one important piece that we haven't shared yet is the website, so we can get you to the walk to experience this wonderful day. So I'll say it twice just to be safe. So it's AFSP.org/Chicago. One more time, A as in Apple, F as in Frank, S as in Sam, P as in Paul, .org/Chicago. Our acronym is a little bit of one of those tough ones where you have to always explain what the letter is. So anyways, want to make sure we get the website out there to everyone.
Thank you. And just to reiterate what's already been said, we often talk about the fact that silence is the biggest obstacle to effective prevention and mental health care. And statistically, it's safe to say, or we can responsibly say, that everyone has been impacted either directly or indirectly by mental health and suicide, unfortunately. But when we talk about this idea of silence and stigma, the best way to really illustrate it is the fact that Out of Darkness Walks, both the name is right on the nose, okay, but the darkness that you're coming out of oftentimes is the fact of feeling you are the only one. You are the only one if you are living with a mental health challenge. You are the only one who is lost. And that's because we put people who die by suicide in this stigmatized box. And so that loved one's memory only sits around or compounded by these feelings of shame and stigma, and we can't talk about it even outside of the household. Sometimes even in the household, there's a bifurcation of who knows and doesn't know. So the idea that you end up in a public space and the color coordinated banding is being a very powerful part of that, but the fact that you end up in an open public space and can just open up and valve out and say, this has impacted my life, is in and of itself for a lot of people earth shattering. The fact is you're going to come to this event, and I have attended a number of the events, and seen individuals who, you know, they didn't necessarily have the ability to engage others and share their stories, but it was earth-shattering for them just to be there and observe. So one of the best parts about Out of Darkness, even beyond the importance of the fundraising, is that if you're listening, if you're wondering, if you've never necessarily put yourself out there, this is not asking you to necessarily get in front of a microphone in front of a crowded audience and share your story. This is not necessarily asking you to go and be a fundraiser. This is not asking you to volunteer at an event. Just take an opportunity to attend an Out of Darkness, whether it's here in Chicago or you're listening anywhere in America or wherever you're hearing this. If you can find an Out of Darkness event near you, just to attend as a fly on the wall, as a passive way to start the conversation for yourself, and or take a friend or someone you know, that might be a way to help start the conversation for them. There's a lot of individuals, younger individuals, who take their parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles to Out of Darkness events as a way to start a conversation that it just wasn't able to have. So one more time, to double, triple, quadruple down on that, AFSP.org. I said backslash, it's forward slash, I'm sorry. So it's AFSP, Alpha Frank Samson Pineapple.
.org. Like better than my P.
Wait, I forgot the forward slash Chicago. And just remember the AFSP.org part, because it's a beautiful website and you can navigate it. But give yourself a chance to start this conversation by experiencing an Out of Darkness. It's an amazing thing. And I think that's a good place for us to sort of wind down this event. It wouldn't be doing my job if there wasn't any last minute plugs. Other social medias, AFSPs on Facebook, Instagram, doing the Twitters.
Doing the tweets. So follow us. Also, our website for the chapter is afspil.org. There's lots of ways to get involved throughout the year, whether it's volunteering, presenting our programs, bringing programming to your community, ordering materials to share in your community, doing the walks, holding a third-party fundraiser. There's so many ways. So if you visit the website, you can learn that, or you can connect with us directly. Our contact information's on there. But just want you to know, whatever may fit for you, we can work with you, and we want to be here as a resource and help you out. And obviously, thanks to our partners, Hope for the Day, for having us here tonight. Thanks for allowing us to be a partner and be on your wall as people walk out. I got the chills again seeing it. So we're just really grateful for the partnership and for this opportunity to share our message and what we're up to. So thank you for that.
And we'll do a quick round the lap. If anyone has a few closing remarks, Mike?
I just want to echo how much I appreciate Hope for the Day and Sip of Hope. This is a place that I've come when I do some writing. So when I'm in the city with my computer, this is a great place to hang out, have some great coffee, and enjoy being in a place where you know you're doing good while you're enjoying where you're at. So thank you so much for the partnership and everything that you guys do.
And I want to thank you, Carl, for being a fantastic moderator and summing things up in the most articulate and meaningful way that is possible. You should be on radio.
Well, my mama said I had the face for it. So, Steve, you want to get a little. As a side note, Steve was Hope for the Day's inaugural Partner in Prevention Award recipient on behalf of AFSP last year at the Hope Ball, so just throwing that out there.
I just want to say that, you know, when I got involved with AFSP initially, it was really a lot of people that, like Kara and I, that had lost someone to suicide. And as the years developed, we really started seeing the value of partnering with people that have been struggling with suicide. Either they've had their own attempts or they've just been having their own ideation and just trying to fight it. And mental health, as depression, anxiety, all of that is something that we've now realized these are people we need to reach. You know, really, if we're going to prevent suicide, this is the group that knows it, that's experienced it, and has come back from it and can help. And also, they have contact with the people. They have contact with the people that we need to get in touch with. And they've got the ideas. They've got the information. So we're just delighted to be working with Hope for the Day. I mean, this is just exactly the kind of thing that I wish the rest of our states were able to do. I mean, we feel very lucky in Illinois to have Hope for the Day.
Thank you so much. So with that, as we close out, it's a quote that I've started to really fall in love with and use a lot. I am appropriating it from the Kit Harington family, who have the Wide Wonder Bus tour sponsored by Eating Recovery Centers. And they said this quote to me, and they were quoting someone else. So just they said that connections are the currency of wellness, and the connections between AFSP and Hope for the Day helps amplify and work towards the idea of building wellness. The Out of Darkness Walk is an opportunity to build connections, getting involved with AFSP through whether it's advocacy, volunteering, or sitting in or finding a way to facilitate their programming as a way to build connections in your community. And so with that, I want to thank everyone for attending. Sip of Hope for being our host. I want to acknowledge Rick Osowski's Anthologies of Hope for co-producing Conversations Cafe. And of course, and this is slightly ironic, Conversations Cafe is produced and presented to the public with the generous support from Banyan Treatment Center and AFSP. And so, Kara, Courtney, Steve, Mike, on behalf of AFSP, thank you so much for being our guests on this episode. Good night, everybody.
Thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google, and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.